away from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win. For we're from Tigerland. We never weaken till the final siren's gone.
Alrighty, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Big Footy Tiger Cast Monday Night Live Show. Hope you're doing very, very well from wherever you're tuning in from around the world. I like saying world because we're far reaching. We're reaching far and wide. It's awesome. EJ, welcome. How are you, mate?
I study nuclear science. I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher. He wears dark glasses. Things are going great and they're only getting better. I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright, I got to wear shades.
The future is so bright indeed. Look, the result was a little bit frustrating, but to your point, EJ, if we look at it in totality, it's looking okay.
That was the great Timbuk 3, released in about 1986, and it was a massive hit. And every time I think about things looking up, that pops into my head.
I like it. I'm sure there's going to be more of that we touch on tonight because there was plenty of good stories to come out of that game against the Giants. Usually we would lead off with the North Melbourne death ride chart, but there was no game for them this week and nothing really changed. Melbourne kind of shit the bed, Sydney shit the bed. So teams weren't winning that we probably needed to win to create some separation, including ourselves, ironically. But no real update there. But hope everyone liked the new intro as well. Well done at Canva. Shout out for letting me just tweak a few bits and pieces, which was good. But we do have a couple of new nominations for Come On Man, which we'll get to later on.
I don't know what I'm doing.
So, that's going to be very, very interesting. But we will get stuck into it, straight into the review of the GWS game, because there's a little bit to get through. But GWS 12-8-80 defeated Richmond 10-17-77 by 3 points in a gut-wrenching loss, I think it's fair to say. The first quarter, though, EJ, my goodness, 6-5. I think that was the best first quarter we've had under Uze's reign. I'm almost positive that's the best first quarter we've had under Uze's reign. But we just looked slick and dominating, and it was quite remarkable to watch, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it was dynamite. A bit worried, and I think they kicked the first goal, and I thought, it's going to be a long day. And one of the things at GWS, they do struggle in transition. They don't run the other way very well, and we really took advantage of it. And it was good to see some ball going through the middle and not just around the flanks.
They were taking the dangerous kick, and I guess a little bit of that is to do with the fact that the Giants were, for whatever reason, letting us have that kick. And I know they obviously tightened up on that as the game got on. But the second quarter, though, EJ, for me, that was the one, right? Second quarter, 1-6-2-2 for the Giants. We had our chances, and as much as the loss really hurt me and hurt probably a lot of people, it's also very, very impressive to just keep into perspective that we were 2 goals away in the second quarter from putting away a top four fancied side at their home ground. Yep. We were so close to putting them away in that second quarter. And then even the third, we kicked 3-5. So again, another hand. I know there was some rush behind it amongst all that stuff, but plenty of easy chances. I know Jonty Four missed a chance. Tom Lynch missed an easy one. Steely Green missed one. Frustrating. It's one of those shit happens moments, but I do take great pride in the fact that had we kicked straight, we could have nailed a top four side in a half of football, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, and we said at the start of the season, we're going to have days where we're on and days where we're not, and we're going to get some bad losses and we're going to have some good performances. That was an on day, and to not take advantage of it is probably why it stings a little bit, because we can all see, everyone in the comments, everyone at home, on Twitter, we should have won that game. Interesting stat, though. So we did kick badly, right? But X score, right, which is it rates your chances of kicking a goal from each shot, etc. Our X score was pretty close to our end score, right?
Right.
They outperformed their X score by about 3.5 goals.
Yeah, so they were kicking accurate and making the most of their chances, especially when the heat was on. And look, I suppose you want to say credit to them for fighting that out. It would have been a tricky game for them to fight back in, but they dug deep. And I do also want to give a shout out straight off the top to Callan Ward. Hate seeing players go down, and he's an absolute superstar of the game. And from all reports, one of the greatest people you will meet in football as well. So, I mean, look, it seems like it could be the worst fear, but hopefully it's not. But
might be confirmed.
Oh, really? That's so shit. But he took his chance to fire him up at three-quarter time, and it worked, whatever he said. They played for him 110% in that quarter.
Yeah, he is the stone on which that team is built. He is the heart, the soul, the base, the bedrock. He is GWS. And I can't say enough good things about him, and absolutely, shattering for him. He's one of the players that, from an opposition side, that I actually would love to see win a flag. He's that sort of player to me. Absolutely love him. And massive respect shown after the game by everyone, and you must be universally loved. Like, some great shots of him and Tim in a big embrace. And you know, when he came down to Melbourne after the game, Ward, and Tim drove him to the relatives' place.
Did he really?
They're really good mates. So, absolutely shattering for the bloke. It's probably, given his age, you'd probably say, like Judd, the last thing on a ground that happened to him will be an ACL.
Yeah.
But 327-odd games, absolute champion.
No, he absolutely is. But, yeah, the loss hurts. So my first question about it is, obviously the 4 points would have been nice to have banked, granted. Is there anything in the way of thinking of saying that maybe we learn more from it being a loss? Like, do we get more out of it, them coming back and us losing, than us running away with it and winning? That might sound really backwards and bizarre, but
we did
a lot of things right early on, but do we now get a better chance to identify the things we maybe didn't do so well as the game went on?
Yeah. I think we definitely learn a lot, probably more. And, you know, this game, we were in the Essendon game, we were in the North Melbourne game. Young teams can struggle to know how to win. We've also won the game holding on against the Gold Coast. So as bad as it is, putting ourselves in these situations is fantastic for development, no doubt. And obviously, you know, we'll talk about, there's a couple of things that probably, I thought we started to freeze up a little bit in the third quarter, actually.
Yeah, you could see the tide was turning a little bit, couldn't you?
Yeah, they got on a run and then we stopped that. And kicked a couple ourselves, and I thought, oh, that's really good. Yeah, very good. Who's that?
Oh, no, someone's walking past.
So even though it didn't go our way, this will massively help long term. And in reality, it doesn't matter if we lose these games this year, because we're going to get a better draft pick, right? If we're in 12 months' time, if we have a sequence of three games like this and we lose all of those games, that's when you start to get a bit worried, let alone frustrated.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's all about the timing of it all. And to Damien's point, and to your point as well, like we should have won the North game. We should have won the Giants game. The Essendon game, we could have won. If we had the right personnel in, I've got no doubt we would have been right up to that in our eyeballs. We could have been sitting potentially 10th or 11th before the bye. Now, I know these are all hypotheticals and what ifs, and they of course didn't eventuate, but the sheer fact that we're even here talking about that as a hypothetical is a massive step forward from what I think all of us thought we would be at the start of the year. I mean, you think back to the West Coast and Collingwood preseason game and how raw and underdeveloped and confused and lost we kind of looked. We showed things for 10 minutes here and there, and it was a little bit unorganized, a bit chaotic. Even then, I think people thought, shit, we are in for a painful year. And we've had we've had those big losses early on, and we may still get more yet to come in the rest of the season. But the fact that we've won three and we're in very, very good and close positions to win another three and should have converted at least two of them, we are, in my opinion, playing well ahead of our projected curve.
Oh, we're miles ahead. We're miles ahead. Now, I think by the end of the year too, I mean, the exciting thing is they're probably only going to get five or six games, but we'll get games into Houghton, Smiley. You know, there's more. Armstrong will get back.
Yep.
Yeah, and I do agree with Nick. You know, we do need to win at least another two games to continue that development. So we need to, you know, nick one of these close ones. And then next time we get up by five or six goals, what we need to do is keep the foot on the throat. That's the thing, is we got to the lead by playing a style of football, and then there was a little bit of that protectionism come in.
They just went back into their shell a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which happens with young kids. Like, I get it. It's just one of those things. But it would have been nice, and maybe it's a little bit of tired legs as well that creeps into it in the last quarter, but it would have been good to have seen them take the game on a bit more and try and actually go for the win rather than, trying to defend a very, very slim lead.
Yeah,
but
we went too slow when we just tried to defend the lead, and it was a disaster waiting to happen. You could see it.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah, someone in the side comments there said, "Oh, they disagree that we're ahead." There's still a lot of senior players and whatever, and we'll say that a bit of experience back on the weekend definitely helped.
And look, Richmond 70, whilst I respect everyone's view, I think you need to take into account that we've lost 1,600 games from last year, and we're playing a lot better than what we were with those 1,600 games in. So it's kind of hard to say that we're not playing better than last year, if I'm being honest, just based on the amount of inexperience we've got in, and we're still producing relatively okay outcomes and being in games that we probably wouldn't have been last year. But each their own. It's all about different views. I want to touch on a couple of players quickly. The first one I want to mention straight off the bat, who I think doesn't get enough love, is Ben Miller. Monster game. Kept Jesse Hogan scoreless for the first time. He hasn't kicked a goal in 42 consecutive games. And he was one that I think a lot of us thought was going to tear us apart, quite literally, on the back of him being in some good form. He's kicked 30-odd goals already this year. I thought it was a massive effort, and it actually kind of hurts a little bit more that we didn't get the win on the back of that individual effort, keeping their key forward goalless, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah. Oh, I, as you know, I don't mind a bet, and I thought, oh, look, try and make the game a bit enjoyable, and I didn't push the button, but I almost had a bet on, you know, Hogan for 6+. I see one of the pundits was tipping him for 10 goals. Miller was huge. Look, I know he went at 72% disposal efficiency, but the 28% that he didn't hit were shockers. But I can wear a couple of errant disposals if you're going to put in a performance like that. Hogan didn't look like it, and the only possessions of any meaning he got were up the ground. He had to go up the ground to find the ball. And that's
fine.
Yeah, that says a lot. Exactly right.
Go and let him do that every single day of the week. Before we get to the next player, we'll pop this one up. Do you think the trajectory that we have shown this year that we can say we're definitely on the right track, EJ?
I can say that we are likely on the right track. I don't think you can ever say definitely, because I think that in a couple of years' time, when we lose Broad, Vlosten, Lynch, you know, et cetera, et cetera, it's when they're gone whether we know whether we've made all the right decisions or not. I would say we are likely on the right track. I'd say we are highly likely, but I can't say definitely.
Yeah, I think there's a bit to play out, but I'm very much enjoying the path we're on. You can see the path, and when that becomes a sustained four-quarter effort, I think we'll be quite a handful to deal with. The next player I want to touch on is your man, Big Tom Sims. More in particular, just the seven marks, three of them being contested, doing it at both ends of the ground. Now, I tried to do the research on this. I didn't have the time to dig this up properly, but I would guess that most first-year key forwards or key forwards slash defenders don't take as many contested marks in a game as what we've seen from him.
The only negative on him is an age slash bulk size thing. When he was in a side-by-side contest with Taylor, he was getting beaten. He was getting physically put out of position. But barring that, I mean, he had a huge game. And what we have been lacking with is that outlet down the line, you know, coming out of defence. He was fantastic.
And exactly that, the outlet down the line. Like, Lynch isn't as mobile as he used to be, and he used to do that for us. So we need someone to be able to now do that. And he's just, it sounds really stupid, but he's just so tall when he has the arms fully extended. Like, it's almost impossible to spoil him without giving away a free kick. Is breakout game the term you use for that? Is it too early for that? Like, I know he's going to have ups and downs, but for me, that's the game he walks away from thinking, shit, I belong. I can do this at AFL level against a good side too.
I don't know whether it was in our PM or somewhere else. I labelled it his breakout game. I thought he was fantastic. And you got to think exactly that. How many 19-year-old bigs do that? I mean, Tim English flopped around like one of those blow-ups outside a car yard for three or four seasons. You give this bloke two more pre-seasons and you get him in at 21 years of age, because he just turned 19 last week, right? So in 2 years' time, he'll be 21. I reckon 21, he's going to be a legitimately very, very good AFL player.
He's going to be a monster. I'm pumped for him. He's actually probably the one that surprised me the most, to be honest. In terms of our draftees, he was probably the one that I didn't think would get games this early just because of his frame size, but he's competing so hard and he's doing a lot of really, really good things. And yeah, that's now turning out to be a really, really good pick.
Didn't surprise me, because I knew he had the shit in him, and that counts for a lot when you're, you know, like, you can see some young kids that they take a little while to adjust to the physicality of the big boys. You know, like, and I'm not going to, I don't want to single him out or anything, but, you know, like, poor old Jack Watts. Jack Watts was a bloody skillful footballer, but he just wasn't ready early because he wasn't that sort of aggressive, combative player. But Sims is that. And so.
No, he loves it. He loves it. Obviously missed that goal, unfortunately, but it is what it is. Young kids, they'll learn, they'll get better. Now on to some of the more experienced players. Dion Prestia, I put a video about this the other day, but he has made a lot of people, including myself, I'll happily put my hand up, eat some humble pie. I wasn't sure he'd be able to come back and play at a really good level to say, you know what, he deserved it, especially on the back of only playing half the VFL game, albeit stretched out across four quarters. But 31 disposals, 9 score involvements, that's a huge number, 7 clearances, 13 contested possessions, 5 tackles, 24 pressure acts. That is vintage Dion. I'll roll with it. That was as good of a game you could expect from him. And the domino effect that has throughout the side is quite substantial.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, I'll put my hand up. I was wrong as well. It's probably not ideal that it's taken him half a season to get to a position where he can play, if we look at the negative sides of it. But, you know, and I thought maybe there was more future in, you know, getting someone else in mid-season. I think we all discussed it here. But that was – I knew Dion could be value when he came in, but I didn't think we would get the Dion from 2019 – in current day.
It's interesting because whilst we haven't had him on the park for a long time, maybe in some ways it's preserved his body a bit. Like, he hasn't been bashed and beaten in the last couple of years because he's missed quite a bit of footy. I know he's had the soft tissue stuff going on, but he was good. And like, Tiggs was on Wednesday night, and we sort of discussed it as well, saying that I thought the midfield would be too slow. And Tiggs' counterpoint was that while Dion doesn't have the foot speed, he's got the speed of mind and the quick releasing hands, and he uses it quicker than a lot of other people, and it kind of works for us. And he was bang on, because we looked a totally different side. If you just look, and I don't know if this is coincidence or not, but if you look at the stoppage numbers just in itself, or clearances, we won clearances 42 to 29. Tell me the last time we would have won clearances by that much. I don't think it would have been in the last decade.
Yeah. Okay. I have a theoretical question then for next season, and I'll pose it to you, and we'll see what comes up in the comments. If you're only going to get 10 games out of him, because he has had now a body that has let him down for numerous years in a row, and even the best Prestia backers can't dispute the fact that he misses way too many games, right? If we're only going to get 10 games out of him next year, do we go with him again? Is the value that he brings in those 10 games worth the spot on the list?
If it's at that level, I'm 100% a yes. I think that the experience that the younger players will get feeding off him, and the leadership and the coaching he can provide on the ground. And the other reason why I say yes is because we're obviously in and amongst games this year. Logically, we're going to be in more games next year, hopefully. And I think having someone like him playing at that level gives us a greater chance to convert some of those to win, which we'll want to start to see more of next year. If he's playing at that level, no doubt in my mind, you give him a one-year contract, whatever it is. Same as Lynch, I think it is very important to keep them around for one more year, just to bridge that gap between when they leave and the experience versus the youth coming through.
Supplementary question. What about that he plays next year quite a lot as the sub, not only for the fact that not playing full games, he won't torch his body, but he can be that coach talking to the four players on the interchange bench during the game?
I'm sure there'll be a role like that for him. I suppose the question becomes, does that help us as a club, him being sub, or do we get more use with him being on the ground and then subbed off? I still think that's one part of the game that we haven't nailed yet as a team, is the sub role. But if his body's feeling good and he's feeling up to it, I'm definitely all for him going around next year. What about you? How do you feel about him playing on again?
Oh, yeah, I think much like Jack Riewoldt in the forward line, even though Riewoldt in the last two seasons was clearly cooked, he provided that much coaching instruction on the ground that, you know, it was extremely useful.
And I guess we don't need him to play every game. Like, we can actually properly manage him too. Like, it might be two games on, one game off, something along those lines, because we will have the kids coming through that can take the reins for a game, right? They don't have to do it the whole season, but there's definitely ways that we can prolong his career. And I think that he's shown just in that one game how super vital he is and what he can actually offer us. So I'm all for it. But some of the other players had big games. Jacob Hopper, 29 disposals, 17 contested possessions and 13 clearances. Now, the 13 clearances, I think, is an automatic byproduct of Dion Prestia being in the side. Because they have been good, but this was really good. I felt like this was a bit next level, but I thought Hops had a pretty good game, as did Taranto. I know Taranto was a weird one. He had a really good first three quarters. I thought he was harshly treated in the last quarter, and I don't want to pin a game on one moment, but that non-hold was as blatant as anything, and he got wore like a glove by Bedford, which we knew was going to happen. Every contest he was being held, every stoppage. But I thought Tim and Hopper both had really good games against their former club.
Oh, they were amazing. And like I think someone said before, Miller might be top five in our BNF this year. I'll tell you what, I reckon both of those two would be in the top three. Not the top five. They are having amazing seasons.
I would be shocked if they're not top three. It would be a huge call. Sam Banks, 25 disposals. I thought another really good game, providing drive off the half back line, settling into the role well. And I know we ask this question almost weekly, but I'll ask it again to everybody and yourself, EJ. With Banks doing what he's doing at a pretty respectable level, what does that mean for Jaden Short, who is a week away?
I would make sure Ernie's spot back in the side. I don't think I'd be loath to move Banks from that halfback position now. He's coming on so quickly. He's developed more in like the last couple of months than he had in a couple of years previous. Yeah, that was amazing. I would be loath to move him. And unfortunately, unless you're going to stick Shorty on a wing, I can't see a spot for him because I like what we're doing up forward. I don't really want to change. I'd like to change the accuracy, but I don't really want to change the mix too much.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's got to earn the spot. My fear is that he'll be handed the spot, and if it's at the expense of Banks, I think that sends a really poor message. I really hope we don't do it. History suggests that we generally do that for some reason, and you know, I've been all for the wing spot as well, but then I see Juddy Clark's performance in the VFL. I'm like, I want Juddy Clark on that wing. I think he offers. Even though I've not seen him at AFL level yet to do that, I still think that long-term, Jaden Clark will offer more on that wing than what Shorty will.
I agree.
It's a doozy. Like, it's going to be really, really fascinating to see how we handle this situation with Short. We can't not remove Sam Banks from that spot. The only player that could be at risk here that it might not be as damaging is if it's like Caleb Smith, for example. Playing the back line, so that's an easy way back in. But then Smith's kind of bumped Trainer out of that spot as well. Not saying Trainer's playing bad, but I think they've just felt that that's where Caleb plays his best footy. So Trainer's been floated on the wing and half forward and everything like that. So then maybe is it now more so? Do you want Trainer or Short?
I really believe that now where we are, we've got. There are senior players that are really important to helping the kids develop, and there are senior players that are not as important to helping the kids develop. I believe we get more out of 10 games of Dion or whatever. I don't think Shorty falls into that class of player that is important to have there to teach the kids. We've got Flossen and Broad down back. You don't need, and you know. So, and you've got Brown on one side and you've got Banks on the other. Just leave it.
A few people made a mention, what about Short as sub?
Not the worst idea. No, because he has got versatility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes on fresh, adds a bit of dash. I actually don't mind that. I don't mind that as a solution. That's a good call. Who else do I have down here? Your man, EJ. Now, I've got a video coming about him in a couple of days too. Kane McAuliffe, your other man, you've claimed two. You've got Sims and you've got McAuliffe. 18 disposals. And these won't sound sexy, but let me just work into it. 18 disposals, 15 pressure acts, 4 clearances, 12 contested possessions off 62% game time. That's the lowest game time he's had this year. And I'm sure there's valid reasons why they're doing this, whether it's workload or whatever it might be. But the fact he's hitting these numbers at such little game time, and it's not the first time he's done this either, he has to be a mainstay. And I'm almost certain by year's end, he will be one of the starting midfielders for 75-85% midfield time. I don't know who he's going to replace, but he is a cannonball in there. Him busting through packs, he was hitting good targets on the weekend as well. He's got a good penetrating kick. The left footness as well, I think we all enjoy too. He is really building into this season quietly. I think he's under the radar.
Yeah. I don't often make outlandish predictions, but I predicted that I said that he would be a 200-game player after like one or two games. He came on as the sub in his first game, and was his first game against St Kilda over at Norwood?
Oh, I
was that his first game last season? Anyway, I remember that the St Kilda game at Norwood Oval, and he fired off a couple of balls from the inside, and he did this pickup on the flank right on the boundary line, and I saw that, and I just went, no, he's going to make it. He's, I only claim one per year. I claimed him last year, so I'm happy with that, and I've claimed Sims this year, so, yeah. No, McAuliffe has to stay in the 23.
And like I was reading his draft profile today, and there's a lot of good leadership traits as well that were really attractive to clubs too, and maybe that's a good feature of his game being out in the field. But all the rave, even in his draft year, was just how much of an inside beast he was. And the main thing they wanted him to add was that outside polish, which is probably still true today. But he's getting better and better each week, and it feels like he's belonging. So which is good. So Paul, I thought he tackles okay, and when he tackles, they stay tackled too. That no one gets through him.
Not that I'm pumping his tires up too much, but let's just remember that Dusty didn't tackle.
But no, he is a very good pick for pick 40. That was our first pick in 2023, so I reckon we're doing okay there.
Okay, finally, we'll someone just said in the comments it was Norwood when he debuted because he's a South Australian kid and he debuted over there.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, there we go. So we'll end up on a couple of stats. So 61 inside 50s we had, EJ. I know you always say the magic number is that 50 to 55, but obviously the concern being 10 goals from 61 inside 50s is not the ratios you want to be at. And then finally the clearances, 42 to 29. I thought that were just two standout stats that were polar opposites to what we saw weeks prior, but we maybe got touched up in those categories.
Yeah. Yeah, bad kicking is bad football. 60 entries. If we turn that 10-17 into 17-10, we're not lamenting our forward 50 entries. I just think it was our finishing that let us down. I think system-wise, I think we were really good on the weekend.
We were. No, we definitely were. Tucker's been in the chat. He's been in the chat. Hey. We're adding something new to the Monday night show. Obviously, we had Tiggs on Wednesday, who's more handling the one-on-one type of show better than being amongst everything because his brain can't process it all, which is completely understandable. So what I've asked him to do, I've asked him to send through a video question that we can play each week. So he still has a little bit of input. Now, he's recorded the question and sent it through. However, it looks like he's in a witness protection scheme with the quality that it come through at. I think it's to do with his phone compressing the image, the video. I had no way of fixing it, so it is what it is, but we can at least hear the question and we can talk about the question once this video plays.
Jesus, I've got a head for radio time this. Excuse that messy hair. I've been out in the backyard. Look, just got a question about the game. Big thing that stood out for me is Sims. I think he's gone right past Ryan in the sense that he's got something that I was hoping Ryan would develop as a weapon. And one of Sims, every time I saw him take those big marks, it reminded me of Gale or a younger version of Ang. So I was interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, for those who didn't quite clearly hear the question properly, he wanted us to our thoughts on Tom Sims and that he feels like that he's maybe gone past Samson Ryan with his marking ability alone is something that we're hoping to see from Ryan, which we haven't seen yet, EJ. How would you compare the two, Ryan and Sims?
Maybe going past Ryan. Maybe. What? Oh, yeah, no, look, I think it goes back to what I said, that he's got the shit in him. He's got the mongrel. That's, I think, the missing ingredient for Ryan. Ryan's good size and he's got good skills. But if we're looking at the future of Richmond and they're both fit and available, who are you picking on a week-to-week basis? I think I think it tells you he's gone past him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Ryan's probably going to be a little bit better at the ruck work than him for the short term, just until he gets a bit stronger. But that I don't think that will take too long for Sims to catch up and do that stuff too. But wrap back, this is one of my comments of the night here. Filmed on the score review cameras, well done. I do like that. That's a very good call. And it definitely wasn't filmed on the ultra fast computer, but yeah, I don't know how we couldn't get the quality right, but we'll work on that. So yeah, Sims, I think to your point though, EJ, if you're picking for the future, you're picking Sims every day of the week, aren't you?
Oh, I think even for the now, because what you're going to get with Sims is you're going to get a competitive effort. He's going to crash packs. And one area where he is definitely already better than Ryan is he's better on the ground when the ball hits the ground. So.
Yep, no, I think that's a fair enough call. All right, we'll go into the VFL reports because that was the curtain raiser game, which is nice. We could all actually watch it. The Tigers had a very, very good win against the Giants. 13-14-92 defeated the Giants 12-8-80 by 12 points. The Giants were a top four side with about 14 AFL listed players. So our boys did a very, very good job. Juddy Clark was the main disposal winner for us. 27 disposals, 8 marks, 2 goals. For me, EJ, his hand is right in the air to say, pick me at AFL level. I'm quite happy for him to jump onto a wing as well. Can play half forward. He works really hard up and down the ground all day. Ripper game. And the second one I'll name before we chat about it is Maurice Rioli Jr. had an unbelievable game. And I'm not being a smartass when I say that. I'm being deadly serious. 25 disposals, 2 marks, 8 tackles, 2 goals, playing exclusively as a midfielder. And it was a four-quarter effort. It was 4 quarters of him chasing, hunting, disposing, hitting good targets, good 1-2 link-up plays, busting through packs, running the ball out of defensive 50. He was doing it all. And for me, that game, just in isolation, cemented it in my mind that he has to be persisted with as a midfielder at VFL level. I don't think I would pick him in the ones off the back of one game of that kind of nature. I'd love to see him do it 2 or 3 more times. And if that's his norm, if that's his standard of football as a midfielder, you've got something there. But I think that's where we've got to keep playing him going forward.
I think I don't even want him back in after 2 or 3 weeks. Remember in years past when we had players go back, because we're not talking about a young kid here now. He's quite a bit older, right? We had senior players go back like Caddy and McIntosh, etc., and learn a role in the VFL. And it wasn't a 1 or 2 week thing. It was a block of 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever. I want to see a block put in. And if it does work after an extended period, that is the dynamic component of the midfield that's currently missing. So if it does work, happy days, because he does go missing for big chunks when he's playing forward pocket, half forward. If he's not going to go missing by playing extended periods in the middle, well, that's one other thing you don't have to go out and look.
And I'm almost now convinced that he won't make it as a small forward. Small forward's a tough spot, right? It's not an easy spot to play, but it's just really easy for him and anyone else who plays it to go in and out of game. So he looked really good in there, and I agree. He can be the absolute point of difference in the midfield if he can do that on a consistent basis. It's if a spot opens up, number one, and number two, if he can keep doing it at that level in the VFL. So that's the first sticking point for him. But, yeah, if that's what he can do, then that would be a very, very good result for us in more ways than one. Some other players of note in the VFL. Jacob Blight had another really, really good game. 23 disposals, 11 marks, 1 tackle. A lot of people asking how he's not been playing. I know Campbell Gray's been doing some good things too, of course, at AFL level. James Trezise, 18 disposals, 6 marks, 4 tackles, 1 goal. My man Jasper Elga, 15 disposals, 6 marks, 1 tackle. Didn't hit the scoreboard, but he had an okay game. Jacob Bauer, 3 goals, who played a much better game than he did last week. He kind of started this week's game where he left off last week. He had a really good last quarter, so that was good for him. And McKelty Lefau, 11 disposals, 4 marks, 4 tackles, 2 behinds, didn't kick a goal, but shit when he hits someone or tackles them, they stay hit. He's a scary, scary man, and I would not like to be chased by him if I had the ball.
No. No. You know, that the childhood that he had, there was a lot of tackling involved, so.
Yes, yeah, with the NRL background. The other player I want to give a shout-out to, I didn't have him on the notes here, but I really do think Jake Kaczynski deserves a huge pat on the back. Like, I think the guy knows he's probably not going to play AFL football for us again. There's just too many people, too many defenders that are ahead of him, and that's okay. But what he's doing for us at VFL level, just as his individual performances, is really, really good. but he's also allowing these other players like Blight and Gray and whatnot to develop and grow and flourish in their roles too. And I just think he's had such an important role that maybe goes a little bit of an unsung hero type thing at the VFL program. So I just wanted to flag his name a little bit, I guess, and just make sure he got some love, because he's probably, yeah, reside to the fact he's not playing AFL, but he's doing a huge job for us at VFL level, which is helping us out for the future.
Yep, 100%. It's got to be hard knowing that you're just going to be playing seconds every week. But, yeah, unfortunately, we have I don't know. Oh, gee, I reckon that's harsh. I think I didn't get to see the game the weekend, but I watched the VFL the week before, and he was easily best on ground 2 weeks ago. And you're saying he was strong again on the weekend.
I think the paper stamp comment is just because we're not sure why we're not playing him. But
yeah, he will be playing AFL on a list somewhere next year. I just don't think it'll be at Richmond.
I don't think it will be either, which is really flattening, because I thought he showed plenty of good signs and promise. You look at how he come back in pre-season, what he's done the last couple of weeks. Campbell, look, and it's. I suppose the sticking point is I'm not unhappy with Campbell Gray either. Like, I think we're having a win either way there, whichever one of them plays. But we do have a fair amount of stocks of key defenders. So I suppose my first question is, who would you rather keep on the list? If you had to pick one right now out of Jacob Blight and Campbell Gray, who would you pick?
I'd pick Gray, because Blight has value going back to WA.
So then my second part of the question is, and this is all very hypothetical, but could he form part of a package deal if we were going after Harley Reid? Is there an attraction there for West Coast who have lost? What's that?
That's been mentioned a bit around the traps today.
Well, I mean, I've said it for a little while that it fits a little bit and makes sense, because they lost Barras. They're probably going to lose McGovern with like the concussion stuff. And I'm not saying the Blight's the best defender going around, but he feels an actual need for him at the moment in time. So I don't know if he wants to leave. I don't know if he's got the desire to go back home. We don't even know if Reid's going to nominate us, but if it feels like that could be something that eventuates if Blight wants to get opportunities elsewhere, if we don't play him ourselves.
Yeah, he'll get opportunities. He will. You know, when we with might us. Get and we might, no, well, with injuries, you know, there might be opportunities down the line, but
it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Oh, I saw your face change, and then I went, oh. And you know what? I'd actually just written down here a minute ago to talk about the fitness report, because the fitness report came out this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been an update on some players, and I was going to link it back to the fact that we're talking about all of these players and we haven't mentioned someone who is very close to regaining fitness, and that is Gibkus.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So that's another. So we're actually overstocked in that area of the ground. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
Tyler Young.
I know I just said the word. I pulled myself up. we're overstocked in that part of the ground, so there's the opportunity to turn that into picks.
Agree. And I think because like if we go through them all very quickly before we jump into the fitness report, but we've got Miller, Bolter, Gray, Blight, Gibkus, Young. That's six players who can easily walk into our AFL side in its current environment and play as a key position prospect and train as like a key position height, but not yet maybe the build. So that is a lot of depth. And we've obviously got Cozzy and Cozzy's another one who's technically AFL listed who could do it. So that's seven.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's more than enough. So I do think that something we'll have to give at some point in time, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm shattered. I'm just sitting here trying not to speak at the moment.
We'll jump into the fitness report. So Jaden Shaw is 1 week with the calf. So there's, I suppose they've pulled forward the duration until he plays again. Sammy Lawler, hamstring, 3 to 5 weeks. I'm just reading from the club website here. He's doing really well and on track, Serple says. Not a lot of progress to report, but his rehab's going well and we expect to see him out within the time frame we originally said. So they'll just bring it forward week to week. Josh Smiley, conditioning, 3 to 5 weeks. So from a hamstring health perspective, it's pretty good, but we feel like it needs to get through a conditioning block as well. So that's going to be a post-buy thing as well, which we kind of all knew. But then to your point, the exciting ones, Taj Houghton, ACL, 3 to 6 weeks. Taj progressing really well. Last week was his first week of full contact training. And we did see images of him taking down Nankervis as one of his first tasks, which would have gone down a real treat with Toby. So he'll keep doing some non-contact training and we'll hopefully see him after the bye playing some VFL. And Josh Gibkiss, 4 to 7 weeks. So maybe he's tracking a week behind Taj. But he's traveling really well, Serple said, so that's all we can kind of ask for. Harry Armstrong, 5 to 7 weeks. He's starting to look a bit like a bit of an athlete, which is an interesting comment. But he's obviously doing very good things there. And Thompson Dow, Patella, 5 to 8 weeks. Not much to report on his front. But very, very exciting to see that Houghton and Gibkiss in particular are tracking well. I reckon we'll see Taj maybe a week or two after the bye for 3 weeks in the VFL, then I reckon he's going to just burst onto the scene at AFL level. My actual concern is that his debut game is going to be while I'm not in the country. That's my actual concern.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Armstrong's been lifting weights. Maybe he's put on some size. Maybe that's what he looks like in that athlete.
But no, very excited to have those players coming back.
Yeah, I'm actually intrigued by Smiley. You know, they're putting in the conditioning block, and I'm just wondering if something's going on behind the scenes. It just seems a bit weird. Yeah, I thought Smiley would have debuted by now.
Yeah, I still think it's just because he's the work demands of AFL and VFL football of someone of his size as a midfielder is so different to Coates League. I just think his body hasn't acclimatized or gotten used to it. So I reckon they're getting him to drop a couple of kilos to try and lessen the load going through his legs, is my hypothesis on that. And then he can just put it back on with muscle, I guess. But yeah, if they can get him all going around the same time, that would be huge. I agree with you, Grok. I reckon Houghton is going to be geared up to play the last few at AFL level as well, which will be very, very good and very, very exciting.
I'm being accused of spreading negative energy.
Oh, no.
Hang on. For a person who quoted Timbuk3, "The future's so bright, I've got to wear shades to start the show," and I'm giving you negative energy?
All right. Well, now, with that said, it's time for...
Oh, man.
Come on, man. We're back.
Right. Look, there's two entries because I was away last week and also just because I wanted to put two in. The GWS social media team is quite often a very engaging and very funny outfit. Now, I've got no doubt that what they had set up was pre-prepared. I think the situation changes a lot when what happens to Callum Ward happens to Callum Ward. So after the game where you got pumped in all the stats except for holding on by a couple of points on the scoreboard, to put a photo of Taranto in a GWS top celebrating, yeah, and then tagging it for Wardy, I thought that was really poor.
Come on, man.
I thought that was really poor.
Yeah, they're usually pretty good, but that wasn't it. They missed the mark on that one.
And I know we touched on it with the whole Brad Scott Morris finance kerfuffle, but it's got bigger and Caroline Wilson has said that there will be fines for Geelong for the third-party deals and payments that aren't ticked off properly. And it's more than one person, allegedly. So it's not like one deal that's gone wrong. There's a couple of things that have led to this. So they've they're going to be fined. So the person, as we said at the start of the year, the person leading the investigation into Geelong is the person at Geelong who sets up a lot of these deals. He's moved to the AFL 12 months. And they're only going to get a fine.
Come on, man.
Is this some sort of crazy coincidence? Or do I need to get a tinfoil hat? What the hell is going on?
I don't know, but it shot him straight to the top of the leaderboard. What I want to know is, and I haven't had time to research it properly, but I want to know what's the fundamental differences between what they've done compared to what Sydney did with Kerr Tippett that got them banned from drafts, like two drafts, I think it was, fines. I don't know how substantial the differences were between the two examples, but it does smell a little bit, doesn't it?
It smells a lot. And Den Zanin, she's been nibbling EJW's ear all stream, I think referring to the person behind me. You sexist person, you. Imagine labelling that as a she when it's clearly a 1980s male in the music industry. You know, we shouldn't be so quick to label people. Which way? There we go. That is a male. Look at that jaw. What a manly jaw.
It's a bit of bone definition, that jaw line.
Yes, yes, it is. Yes, no. I find this whole Geelong thing quite unsavoury, and I can't believe that they're going to get away with it.
It's, dare I use the words, manifestly inadequate. We've heard that a few times against our own club, but that's just where that seems to fit in there.
Yeah. If you haven't read The Boys Club by Michael Warner, I suggest you do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. It's okay. So Adelaide with salary cap breaches rather than third party payments, but doesn't it kind of all fit under the same thing? Like they're still paying someone too much illegally, like outside of the cap. Like surely that's almost one and the same.
How do they determine whether you forget to report it or deliberately don't declare it?
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one.
So Geelong are saying, "Oh yeah, we forgot." How do they know that they forgot, and how wasn't it deliberately not declared?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a grey area, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. All right. Well, they are top of the list now for Come On Man. So welcome to the board, Geelong. We'll push on to the preview of the Sydney game up against the Tigers this week. I think it's Saturday, I'm going to say, is it 1:10 or 1:20 at the MCG?
1:10.
Now, this game, EJ, now all of a sudden, I actually feel a bit of pressure about this game because for me and how we're playing and how they're playing, this now comes up as a winnable game for us. And that's not being disrespectful to Sydney, just the form line suggests that we should be in a position to win this if we play how we did against the Giants. So first of all, we'll talk about the ins and outs. Obviously, Noel Bolter, I won't say obviously he's going to come back in, but he's going to be available to come back in because his curfew will not impede him. Do you think that that's going to come that he's going to come in for Campbell Gray, despite Gray not doing a hell of a lot wrong?
Yep.
And the other players in the mix, I mean, I think Juddy Clark's in the mix. I don't think Elgar's got his hand up this week. I didn't think he did enough this week, but Juddy Clark for a Caleb Smith or a Camden McIntosh, maybe he goes to, I don't know. I'm trying to be a little bit creative on how to get him in, but would you be inclined to have Juddy Clark come in?
Yes. I probably think that Caleb Smith is unlucky. And I would leave K-Mac as the sub.
Did he have enough impact as sub, do you reckon?
Oh, who does?
Yeah, you know, we haven't got... Yeah, it's a tricky role.
The reason I say K-Mac is, again, it's that versatility. So he can play half back, he can play wing, he can play half forward, he can go into the middle. So if there's an early injury, he can come into the rotation and there'll be not as much disruption. Whereas if you go, like, haven't we played at all as a sub a couple of times?
I don't know.
I have a feeling we played like Samson Ryan's a sub or something stupid like that. Oh, no, that's different. That's different. That's completely different. When you're talking about in-game occurrences, that's completely different to whatever you can all get stuff. Right. No, all it is, because you're talking situational stuff. It's not list stuff, right?
So Grock's going for Jonty out for a rest, Bolter in, Gray Ford. I can handle that happening.
I can do that. Because of Jonty and Sims, one looks more at home at the moment than the other. Mind you, actually, I meant to say this. What about Jonty's Shepherd on the goal line to clear the space for Steely Green?
I was up and about for that moment on the live call. It stood out like dog's balls, and it doesn't happen anywhere nearly enough in AFL football shepherding. It's a lost art, and that was a great bit of team football. I was pumped for it.
And he had prepared that 5 or 6 yards back. He saw the thing, he looked, and he went, right, I've got to go there. It was all – that was unreal.
If he didn't do it, he would have been tackled. Steely. 100%. So a lot of people are saying – a lot of people are keen for Juddy Clark to come in. I agree. If there's a time to play him, it's now. Like the kid's had pretty good games, and he's showing quite a bit at VFL level.
For those that want me to rephrase it, if we require early in-game management, McIntosh is a smart substitution choice due to his versatility. How's that? Is that better?
The other name that keeps popping up, I'm just not sure if he did enough on the weekend, was McKelty Lefau. I think he'll eventually come in and play a fairly permanent role. And I wouldn't even be against Lefau coming in for Jonty if we felt that Jonty needed a rest or to get some confidence or whatever the case might be. I wouldn't be against that, but I equally wouldn't be against the Bolter in for Jonty and Campbell Gray going up forward. I think either way that works.
Yeah. Now, I'm not calling for this, but I'm going to make a point about one of our players from the weekend. I can see a case for a reason why the coaches might take Sonzi out of the side.
Are you referencing the two soccer incidents?
I didn't say that, but you did.
Aside from those two things, I thought he had a pretty decent game, to be honest.
He was really good in the first quarter and a half, and then faded a bit. It was a bit like McAuliffe's early games where McAuliffe just dropped off the face of the earth in the second half. I'm actually okay with Sonzi getting another game because early on in that game, I really liked what I saw. And there was one where he actually got the ball and shoved it out to a teammate who dropped it, and it was a turnover. I've never seen Sonzi chase an opponent harder than what he did. He was busting every sinew to get there. So I saw plenty of things that I liked, but I'm just saying if he does make way for someone else, I think we can see and acknowledge the reasons why.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough call. So is this game now this week against the Swans, in your eyes, a must-win game? Not in the sense of the context of our season, but in terms of our development, our growth, what we've shown, and getting reward for effort in that sense?
I don't think it's a must-win game. What I think is that if it is a close game, I would like to see, even if we lose the close game, if it's a close game, I would like to see development in the way that we handle it.
So what I'm angry about is this is now, in my eyes, the Essendon game all over again, where they've gotten belted the week before and been smashed in the media all week to have a fire-up game against the Tigers, bounce back. I know we had their number last year, but I don't know. It just worries me when those type of games happen, but Brody Grundy obviously is going to be a bit of a challenge for Nank. I think Grundy's one of the, I know he's on the older side, but he's obviously one of those more mobile and athletically gifted ruckmen who can get around the ground a bit more nimbly than Nank. How do you see him trying to combat that one? Because he had a fierce contest against Kieran Briggs on the weekend, obviously, and Brody Grundy's a bit of a different ruck type.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good contest. They're both not really big leapers, Nank and Grundy. They both work well around the ground. Nundy's... I've just confused Nundy, Nank and Grundy. There's been it's like the fly. Nank is a bit more nasty, but you know, so physically it'll be interesting. But I thought Grundy battled really well against Briggs. I've liked a few of his games this year. I reckon Grundy's actually going all right.
Where's the game won and lost for us? I know they're playing shithouse, but they've still got players like Blakey, Heaney, Taylor Adams goes all right when he's playing well up forward. Rampy's still a solid defender. McCartan still does okay things defensively. Chad Warner can do anything on any given day. Where's the game won and lost for us? What kind of things do we have to bring to this game to put them under the pump? Like, funnily enough, we got them last year at the G, so we probably feel pretty good about ourselves, to be honest.
I think defensively, we are set up very well to handle their current forward line. And so if we can break even in the middle of the ground, I think we can get on top, bringing the ball out from half back, because their current Sydney desperately need a quality key forward. You know,
yeah,
McLean is. I really like McLean. I think he's a good part time ruck, part time forward. But Amati's very hit and miss, and they don't have their little niggling busy bee at the moment. What's his name?
Papley.
Papley, yeah. So I think if we can hold them down back, I think that'll go a long way to winning the game.
And defensively has been one of our strong suits, hasn't it? The whole keeping teams to 80 points and whatever. But if you look at their forward line quickly, Braden Campbell, Hamling, James Jordan, Will Haywood, Hayden McLean, Taylor Adams, like pound for pound, and we're chucking Bolter back in there, you'd like to think that we would be able to take care of business down that end of the ground, given that we've just done a pretty good job against the Giants, which is far more potent. I guess it comes down to, like we say every week, the midfield battle and making sure the correct midfield pressure is being applied. Like if we let Heaney and Chad Warner exit stoppages and clearances at speed, you don't want those guys delivering to the forwards, because that will make things difficult. But as someone else said, if we can shut down like one of Heaney or Warner or just neutralise them, then we're probably halfway there, because I think our defence should do an okay enough job.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of comments saying it's going to be a wet game on the weekend. Well, if that's the case, well, then we need to replicate our numbers at stoppage from the weekend, because it will be a higher stoppage game.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think the rain helps them or us? Or neither?
Them. Mature bodies.
Contested game crashing a bit harder?
Yeah.
And that's where, I suppose, that's where maybe Prestia back in helps a little bit, having that bit more experience and seasoned body. And that's probably the other reason why I love Kane McCall from what he's doing, because he is a ball of muscle just smashing into people a million mile an hour. I feel like a wet game's made for him.
He looks like a wet weather footballer.
Yeah, just a genuine hard worker.
Yeah.
There you go, 1 to 5 mil forecast. So do we go one tall forward out? It's a good question.
Yeah, maybe. Get Juddy in.
You definitely don't want to go. You don't want to go too tall into if it's going to be raining during the game. I think it's more. It's a little bit more about when it's going to rain. If it's going to rain in the lead up, you can probably get away with it. But if it's going to rain during, you'd probably want to have a bit more fleet footedness about you. And this is where, like, I know I just said before that I think Jasper didn't play his best game to get picked this week, but that's where someone like a medium-sized forward like him could be handy in wet weather. If it's raining all the time, you don't want a tall. You still got a marking option, but it's good, better at ground level as well.
Well, there you go. And Grop's probably a good point. If it's raining, it probably means McIntosh starts. That really hard, physical, mature body crash bang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Well, there's only one thing left to do. What is the tip and including margin for this game, folks? Let us know in chat what you think. Who's going to win by how much? EJ, are you backing the Tigers in this week? Are we going to get the W?
I'm legitimately backing the Tigers in. by 17 points. And for those people that do use, that are of legal age and do use a betting account, I think $2.71 is a superb price.
Yeah, I saw that earlier.
Yeah, I think it's a superb price.
Yeah, that's an interesting price. I think the Tigers will win by, we'll go 18 points. I didn't know it was going to be wet, though, so that makes things interesting. But look, I'm honestly just hoping we can carry on the form from last week. I mean, if we play anything like we did against the Giants, it should be enough to get the job done. But like people have said in chat, it's all about conversion and making sure that that we can make the most of our chances, which can be a bit more difficult to do in the wet. But this is where hopefully our small forwards can find some form. You want a big game from Seth Campbell and Steely Green, Ryan Mantle, players like that to get busy if the ball's going to be on the deck a little bit, as it could be a little bit more difficult for Tom Sims, Fall, Lynch and co. to do their things. But, yeah, it should be...
I was looking for a prop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't find a lock or a shoe.
A shoe in?
My shoe in of the week, my lock of the week. But no, I think we're a really, really good chance this week.
I just think it would be a good reward for the effort over the last month. Like it would be a nice way to cap off heading into the bye by getting a win as a bit of a well done. You've earned, you've played hard, you've played well. Here's another 4 points. I know it doesn't always pan out that way, but it would just be a nice way to end the first half of our season.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right, well, that is a wrap for the Monday night show. We do have Behind Frenemy Lines coming up this week as well. We've got Team Selection Night on Wednesday as a live, so keep an eye out for that. And then during the bye, there'll probably be a few different things popping up. I think, EJ, we want to do one about some players who may be on the chopping block, as per your suggestion. I want to do one in regards to everyone picking their best round one 2026 side as well, to see what we think that looks like. And I think we need to do some type of mid-season review as well, of course. And if anyone's out there, I'll probably put this out there now. I'm looking to do a video where I'm getting thoughts from you guys, the listeners. If anyone is willing and prepared to video themselves recording an answer in better quality than Tig's video and email it through or Dropbox link me the answer, shoot me a message and I'll send you what the question will be, and I'll compile like a bit of a compilation of everyone's answers to a couple of different questions, and I'll put it out as a video. I've seen a few people do that and they look really, really cool. So thought we would try something similar. But thank you to everybody for tuning in from wherever you are. Make sure you like and subscribe to the channels on Twitter and Facebook, YouTube. I think that's all the places we are. We're on Instagram now, so I'm trying to get Instagram going. I'm awful at it. But if you do see us on Instagram, then it's just Big Footy Tiger Cast. Show it some love. And yeah, other than that, we'll be back on Monday night for the live show, hopefully after a win, to talk about the bye. So we'll see how we go there. But thank you again, EJ. And until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.